You're welcome back. The UN Security Council is expected this afternoon to bring down the curtain on its peacekeeping mission in southern Lebanon, which was established back in 1978. By 2027, Ireland's participation in the mission will have come to an end, a mission which involved more than 30,000 Irish troops, 47 of whom lost their lives. We're joined now by the Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, Simon Harris, from our Doyle studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
We know that there's been months of behind-the-scenes negotiations on this issue, which you've been involved in, and we will come to that. But first, what's your reaction to UNIFIL being axed in 2 years?
So, to be very honest, it's one of mixed emotion, because only months ago there was a very significant chance, perhaps only weeks ago, that there was going to be an immediate end, that the mandate would not be renewed, that it would not get through the Security Council. And my immediate concern as Minister for Defence then was what that would mean for the security of our own troops, for the security of the peacekeepers in general, and for security in the region. We have a very, very long, as you rightly say, very long and proud association with the UNIFIL mission. And today I want to pay tribute to the thousands upon thousands of Irish men and women who have served Óglaigh na hÉireann and UNIFIL with absolute distinction. And I particularly think today of the 47 members who paid the ultimate sacrifice, who lost their lives in the cause of peace. And I think of them and their families today with a great sense of gratitude for their proud service.
On those negotiations you referenced, can you explain why the United States was so emphatic in demanding UNIFIL's mandate ended this time next year?
Well, look, I don't want to speak for the United States of America, far from it, but I think they've outlined their views on a number of occasions, including what seems to be a cost containment view that they take to the United Nations and its work in general. However, I must say we did have constructive engagement with the US, and I think we saw the benefit of countries working together, of France, of Austria, of Ireland, of Italy, of Lebanon itself, and indeed of UNIFIL officials, in saying to our American counterparts, yes, you have a perspective, but it would be an extraordinarily dangerous situation to have an abrupt end, an abrupt cliff edge to a peacekeeping mission in a very volatile part of the world. And we must remember, Paul, there's a relatively new Lebanese government in place. That's a government that is extremely serious about disarming Hezbollah, is extremely serious about trying to give the people of Lebanon a new start. And the idea that we, the international community, the peacekeepers of the world, would walk away at this moment would have been wholly, wholly irresponsible. So the diplomatic campaign, I think, has gotten us to a much improved situation. And if they say a week is a long time in politics, trying to predict with certainty where we'll be by the middle or end of 2027 is a very, very challenging thing to do.
Well, you mentioned time there. The UNIFIL mission was created 8 years before you were born. Was it effectively in existence for too long?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, I think there's broader questions as to how the civilians and people of that region have not been better supported by the international community more broadly, and indeed how Hezbollah have been allowed have such a hold in the region. And of course, I think of Hezbollah as a brutally illegal terrorist organisation that have inflicted pain and misery on so many people, including on Irish troops. But I think what is important now, though, is that we don't turn our back on Lebanon. I was there in Lebanon in March. You were there as a journalist covering my visit. I do think with a new government in place, I do think there's a real opportunity now to try and give the people of Lebanon the start that they so desperately crave. And I, as a representative of the Irish government, am determined that we stand in solidarity with the good people of Lebanon. And I think what will happen today at the UN Security Council, or at least what we expect to happen, will be to provide very important time and space. My concern was that if there was to be an immediate end to this mission, the next number of months would be about withdrawal. We actually now have a full, longer than a year of the peacekeeping mission left before withdrawal even commences. So we have bought some time that needs to be used wisely.
Just one more question in relation to UNIFIL. How much of a difficulty does it present for the Irish Defence Forces that its largest overseas deployment mission is going to be gone?
That's a really, really good question because many people join the Defence Forces, and one of the appeals for joining the Defence Forces is serving overseas in difficult and dangerous parts of the world for the cause of peace. There is no more important cause. But what I would say to the men and women of Óglaigh na hÉireann, what I've said to the Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces, is come what may, Irish people will continue to serve in Óglaigh na hÉireann in overseas missions, and there will be other opportunities to serve with distinction in the name of peace. We've seen troops serve in other parts of the world. world in the past, and I've no doubt we'll see that again in the future. We remain very committed to peacekeeping in Ireland and in the Defence Forces.
OK, you're travelling to Copenhagen today for an informal meeting of EU foreign ministers tomorrow. You might have heard in the bulletin there in relation to a joint letter from Sweden and the Netherlands calling for the EU to suspend trade with Israel due to what it terms extremely disturbing and intolerable situation in Gaza. What's your reaction?
Well, I'm delighted to see the coalition of countries wanting to take action against Israel growing. It's been a lonely place in the European Union when it's been Ireland, Spain and a handful of other countries calling for concrete actions for a sustained period of time. Words of condemnation simply aren't enough. Kaja Kallas, our High Representative for Foreign Affairs, did good work in terms of putting proposals in place, 10 different areas in which sanctions could be taken against Israel to try and put pressure on them to end the genocidal activity. And so far, none of those sanctions have been actioned. And I'll be taking a very clear message on behalf of the people of Ireland to Copenhagen. We want to see clear, concrete action against Israel. Words of condemnation are not enough. We cannot ignore the fact that there are now children in so much pain and famine and hunger in Gaza that they can't even cry any longer. We cannot ignore what international organisations are telling us about famine, and we cannot ignore a genocide. The people of this country feel so strongly on this. So I will work with the Swedes, with the Dutch, with everybody and anybody for standing up for our values. The world is looking at the European Union and our credibility as a union in many ways is on the line. Now is the time to say, are we going to be true to our values? The President of Ireland, President Higgins, was so correct on this last night, and we must have his words ringing in our ears at this time also.
52 young Palestinians from Gaza, we learned just before coming on air, are due to travel to Ireland to begin a new life as students in Irish universities. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm both excited and relieved that this is happening. As you can imagine, it's so difficult to manage to safely evacuate people from Gaza. And my own officials, my diplomats on the ground, and indeed others, have been working extremely hard to make this happen. Irish universities, 11 of them, have offered places to Palestinian students on courses. 11 universities right across the country. My department's job was to try and see if we could safely get these young people out of Gaza and into Ireland. So we've worked with the Jordanian authorities. We got people from Gaza through a crossing into Jordan onto Amman, and now they're making their way to Ireland. Around 27 are due to land today. Some will land tomorrow, and the rest will land on Sunday. What I should say, Paul, of course, based on our last discussion, people are coming from a war zone. They're coming from an area where there's genocidal activity. Our first and immediate priority will be to transfer them to a medical facility for screening, for treatment. We'll be also trying to address serious issues that will have arisen as a result of malnutrition. So this is a small, practical step that the Irish people can take to show solidarity and help young people in Palestine. And isn't it an incredible testament to people living in such horrific humanitarian situations that they still are desperately trying to pursue their educational goals as well?
The EU will also be focusing on Ukraine at that meeting tomorrow. The EU foreign policy chief, Kaja Kallas, says that the European Union is summoning the Russian envoy in Brussels over the targeting of civilians in Kyiv overnight. As I understand it, you're going to do the same?
Yes, I've directed my officials to issue a demarche to the Russian embassy here in Ireland to effectively summon diplomats to our headquarters. I mean, what we saw last night was, despite all the talk of diplomacy, dialogue, peace efforts, whatever Putin said to President Trump in Alaska, what we saw last night was Putin having less than zero interest in peace, continuing his campaign of terror against the people of Ukraine, an extraordinary air attack last night in terms of its scale. But last night, Putin and Russia also breached the Vienna Convention, because during that night strike, they struck the EU mission offices. And I've seen pictures that Kaja Kallas has sent on to me today of the impact of that targeting of our EU building. We're members of the EU. That was a target on our building last night in Kyiv. And it's absolutely appropriate that the entire world condemns that breach of the Vienna Convention. And we've really got to ask ourselves now, is Russia in any way serious about peace? They're not showing any actions in relation to that. And I'll be proposing to colleagues in Copenhagen now that we need to prepare a further robust package of sanctions here, because we can't just presume Vladimir Putin's going to have a change of heart. We have to really increase the pressure here on Russia to bring about an unconditional ceasefire.
And we will hear directly from the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, in a moment. But finally, Tánaiste, to Simon Harris, can I turn to a domestic issue, the tragic case of 9-year-old Harvey Morrison Sherrett, who suffered from scoliosis but waited for years for urgent urgent back surgery and whose death has led to calls for your own resignation. You gave a commitment a number of weeks ago to meet the family. Can you tell us when is that going to happen? What are you going to be able to say to them?
So firstly, my heart goes out and my heartfelt sympathies to Harvey's family. And I have directly spoken to Harvey's mother to convey my sympathies and absolutely to offer to meet. That meeting will take place, Paul, at a time of their choosing and in a manner that works for them. I expect it to take place in the next few weeks, but at a time of their choosing. What I would say is this: successive governments, successive ministers, including myself, have applied a focus to this issue, have applied extra resources to this issue. And despite all of that, we're nowhere near where we need to be as a country. And what we must do now is very carefully listen to the parents, listen to the clinicians. I've spoken to the Minister for Health in relation to this. I know she's a number of processes underway in relation to CHI, but I want to very respectfully and carefully listen to parents, listen to clinicians, and see what further action is required.
But do you think they're going to be able to believe a commitment coming from you, our successive health ministers, given what's happened in the interim since you gave that commitment, that things are really going to take off when it came to providing care?
I remember the HSE giving me that commitment when I was minister, and I remember lots of extra surgeries being carried out and more children getting treatment. But I also know that that absolutely was not sustained. I think there are legitimate questions that parents have in relation to treatment plans and pathways of care for their children in CHI, and we've got to listen to them. We've got to all work together on this. I have no intention of playing kind of partisan politics in this. I will humbly approach this issue. We all must do better on this, and I'm absolutely committed to that.
Tánaiste and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, Simon Harris, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.